It's time to go back to school with Professor Fish, America's only show dedicated to college athletics on a national level.
Oh, man, I think the clock is slow.
University of Fish. Class is now in session.
I don't feel tardy.
Here's the professor, Tim Fisher.
What a week of college football we have for you this week. And there are some huge games. We've got Notre Dame and Georgia. We've got Oregon, Nebraska, but we're not going to talk about those. You'll hear picks on them, but you're not going to talk about those. We're going to talk about three games this week. We're going to talk about Auburn and Clemson, USC and Stanford. And in the big one tonight, Oklahoma, Ohio State, it could be for all the marbles. We'll have to see how the road lays out after this game, but we got some great games on tap this week. So what we're going to do, we're going to first start off and talk about what's going on in the weather. We got Hurricane Irma that is bearing down on Florida right now. If you have a game in the state of Florida or you play in the state of Florida, you're not playing today. And it's a good chance that Florida State and Miami will not even be played next week. We'll have to see how that goes. I pray for all the people in the path of Irma. I know people in St. Thomas, and they are trying to pick up the pieces now after Irma went through there earlier this week, and now Jose is bearing down on them. So from the professor to all the students out there in the University of Fish, I am praying for you. I'm looking out for you. Great thoughts, great vibes going to you. Let's get this started. We're going to start off with a power trip.
The professor is going on a power trip. The Pac-12.
We're joined by Ryan Abraham right now of USCFootball.com. Now, Ryan, the story last week, the play of USC kind of got overshadowed by the final extra point. One of the great scenes you'll ever see in college football. Talk about that for a second before we get on to Stanford.
Yeah, Tim, it was. I mean, the game was a little, wishy-washy, like you said, but when you see a blind long snapper who's been practicing for 2.5 years at USC, played a couple years in high school, and they bring him into the game, and he delivers a perfect snap on the final PAT of the game. His teammates are mobbing him. Everyone's going crazy. He's answering all kinds of questions from the media. It was a really special moment around the program, something that everyone was talking about. To get this kid into the game, he's not like a little kid anymore. I mean, we've seen him around since he's 12. He's like 6'4", 220 pounds, but to be a blind long snapper, to go in there and deliver a perfect snap, it was a pretty special moment.
It really was. It was good to see, but it was good to see that USC had pulled away from Western enough that they could do that, because they set it up before the game was even started, that USC wouldn't rush the first PAT try if they would let be considerate of him coming in the game. But it didn't look like he was going to get to come in the game, because Western kept it really close. Western had the lead for most of the game. But what does USC and Sam Darnold have to do, and Coach Clay Helton have to do this week against Stanford that they weren't doing this past week?
We talked to Sam Darnold about this a little bit yesterday, and Clay Helton too. He went back and looked at the tape. He's normally his biggest critic, and he felt like after watching the tape, he maybe didn't play as bad as he thought he did walking off the field. That's the first time he hasn't thrown a touchdown pass since his very first start with the game that they lost against Utah last year. But he had a few drops. I think the running game was just working really well. And trying to get those new receivers into the rotation proved to be a little bit harder than I think any of them thought. Deontay Burnett was still the same guy. He's the number one guy by far. But they need one or two other guys to kind of step up. They started some veterans, they brought in some freshmen, but no one really kind of caught fire. So I think they need to be able to feel more comfortable with the other receivers in the game besides Deontay Burnett. I think they'll be able to run the football, but they have to get the passing game going. They have to feel comfortable to be balanced. If they're not balanced, they're just not as effective of an offense as they'd like to be.
Now, when it comes to the other side of the ball, Western Michigan was moving the ball with pretty much ease through the first 3.5 quarters of the game. A little stiffer test this week with the Stanford offense. Granted, they've only played Rice down in Sydney, Australia. No Christian McCaffrey, but they've seemed to found a replacement.
Yeah, Bryce Love is a special back. We got to see him a lot last year, especially when Christian McCaffrey was hurt. He's an elusive guy. He can beat you with speed. He can pass through. USC has to be ready. The defensive front for USC got pushed around. I think it's a good group of Western Michigan tailbacks. I think they have a really good offensive line, but it's not going to be as good as Bryce Love, and it's not going to be as good as the Stanford offensive line. So we talked to Clancy Pendergast this week, USC's defensive coordinator. He's kind of keeping things close to the vest, but I think they know they have to be more aggressive. It looked a little bit more like they were kind of standing around, reading, reacting, where this group of athletes, I don't think that's when they play well. They play well when they're being aggressive and forcing the action. So I think you're going to see a little bit more of that against Stanford. But if they can't hold the line of scrimmage and not get pushed back like they did against Western Michigan, it'll be a long day against Stanford.
And it will be. It's going to be a great game. One of the three ranked matchups we have this weekend. I know USC is going to be involved in a few more of those this year. We look forward to talking to you down the line, Ryan Abraham.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on, and everyone enjoy your college football weekend. It's here again, and we just love all these games.
We're going to take a break, but we'll be right back right here on Extra Sports 1300. You're listening to the University of Fish.
Everyone, back in your seats. University of Fish is back in session.
This is Chad Hall, former Air Force Falcon and NFL player. You are listening to the University of Fish.
The professor is going on a power trip, the SEC.
We're joined now by Philip Marshall of Auburn Undercover. Now, had a game last week. It's going to be a whole lot different from this week. Offense looked good last week with Jarrett Stidham. Philip, what do you think?
Well, you know, it was good, not great, the first game, which was kind of not surprising. I think Stidham was a little bit rusty. Hadn't played in almost 2 years, but he got better as the game went on. And, of course, they dominated the game. They could run the ball basically whenever they wanted to. So, you know, not a lot to take out of that game, except most of the time, I mean, it's a cliche, but it's true. Most of the time, teams take a big step between their first game and their second game. And, you know, I think it's similarly with Clemson. They didn't have any trouble, but they weren't going to have any trouble with who they played. So I think it's a real test for both teams.
With Jarrett Stidham there at quarterback, now he's got a couple good running backs behind him, and you've got some receivers, but what are you going to have to do against that Clemson front line to be successful?
Well, they're going to have to establish the run in order to be able to pass, putting it simply. I mean, if they can't run the ball, they'll have a hard time protecting the quarterback. And again, I think Clemson faces the same thing. Auburn's defensive line certainly hasn't gotten as much attention as Clemson, but it's really, really good. I mean, yes, they were playing Georgia Southern last week, but they held them to 78 yards of offense. So, but, you know, I think that they got to execute their offense. It's different. It'll be Chip Lindsey's second game as offensive coordinator. There's a lot of RPOs in there that weren't there in the past. And but regardless, my opinion is they've got to be able to make Clemson respect the running game. I mean, they don't have to run for 300 yards, but they got to make Clemson respect the running game. Otherwise, they'll certainly will have a hard time protecting the quarterback.
Well, it looks like Clemson has found a replacement for Deshaun Watson and Kelly Bryant. What does the defense of Auburn have to do to stop him?
I didn't get to watch much of that game. I think he's a dual threat guy. I know that. And I figured he would be fine. I don't think he's Deshaun Watson or anything close to it, to be honest with you. And I, both sides, it's hard to base a whole lot on the first week for either team because they were playing teams that could not beat them. And, but I'm sure that they will, they will focus on him and, he's not all they got. They got receivers. They got a really good offensive line. So, I mean, last year it was a defensive battle, 19-13, and I kind of expect it to be something similar this year. I don't think it'll be a real high scoring game.
Well, I know when Clemson and Auburn do get up in the battle of the Tigers, it usually is a defensive battle. Not looking forward to anything other than that this year. Philip Marshall with Auburn Undercover. Thank you for joining us today. Look forward to talking to you throughout the season.
Okie doke. Thanks a lot.
The ACC.
We're now joined by Eric Boynton from Spartanburg, South Carolina. Yes, that is Clemson territory. And Eric, how you doing today?
Doing well. Thanks again for having me.
I love having you on. And it looks like Clemson may have found a quarterback.
Well, I'll tell you what. The fan base is definitely exhaling slightly up here. especially after the second series of the ball game for Kelly Bryant, Deshaun Watson's replacement. They scored on a two-play drive. The second play was a 61-yard perfect strike to Deion Kane, the receiver who was two or three steps behind the defense. And I think you could hear the Death Valley crowd kind of go, whew, okay, maybe things are going to be okay, because Kelly Bryant's a wonderful athlete, better athletically than Deshaun Watson when it comes down to running and such. The questions were, could he read defenses? How is his arm? Could he throw the ball downfield? And while, you know, we've got to take a step back, this Kent State team was a bad, bad football team. There's a lot of, FCS division teams that would have handled this team. They weren't very good at all, maybe even worse than advertised coming in. So this is almost more of just a dress rehearsal. You know, it was just a glorified scrimmage in the end, even though it did count. And it was in front of, you know, not a packed crowd, but still in front of 75, 80,000. So you're getting your chance to play in front of the big stadium with the crowd, getting your feet wet. And I'm sure Bryant's going to take a lot of confidence away from this game. He played a little over a half, but now we'll get the test. We're going to find out so much about what this Clemson team's all about when a very, very strong Auburn team comes to town Saturday night.
Now, speaking of Auburn, you know, Auburn has always built themselves on defense. We know that. What are the Tigers going to have to do, the Clemson Tigers, that is? I always love this game because it's Tigers versus Tigers. What does Clemson have to do to get past the Auburn defense?
Well, the main goal of Brent Venables always during his tenure with Clemson here, the defensive coordinator, is to just try to make teams, and probably, the all good defensive coordinators try to do this. You're going to try to take away what the other team does best, and if you can make another team one-dimensional and force them to do what they don't want to do, that's always the key. And Venables has been a master of that. And they're just going to have to take away the running game. I mean, they've got a solid offensive line. They've got Braden Smith, a first-team All-SEC guy, most likely at the right guard. They've got some seniors on that line. And they've got a two-headed running back, two-headed monster running back, Cameron Petway, a junior who's about a 200 and I'd say maybe 40-pound guy, just a bruising back with good athleticism. And then secondly, they've got Kerryon Johnson, who's another junior, a little lighter speed guy. He's a return man. He's very dangerous in the return game, one of the better all-purpose guys in the SEC. So that's going to be the key, to take this running game away. Clemson certainly has the front line, arguably the best front four in the country, and one of the best front sevens with their linebackers overall you're going to see anywhere. So that will be the main goal, and then we'll just see what Jarrett Stidham's like at quarterback. He's a transfer in from Baylor, and he's had to sit out last year, and he was able to beat out Sean White, a guy who's had at least double figure starts over the last couple of years for Auburn. Started the opener against Clemson last year, so we'll have to see what Stidham brings to the table. He's kind of the X factor in this, but a big, huge key is going to be Clemson shutting that running game down, and they certainly have the front seven to be able to do that.
Now, when the ball is flipped with Clemson on offense, other than Kelly Bryant, who's going to have to step up?
Well, it was funny. They used four. They lost. People forget with Deshaun Watson. That's all the talk. They did lose top seven draft pick and Mike Williams at wide receiver to the NFL. But a key guy here that a lot of people don't talk about is they lost Wayne Gallman, fourth rounder to the New York Giants. And Gallman, as a junior, set the school record for rushing yards in the season. And then last year, not quite as many touches, but he was just he wasn't a burner, wasn't a guy that was going to hit the home run for you, essentially. But he was going to always get the tough yards, make the key plays, smart as a run blocker, all that. Clemson used four guys from the running back position on Saturday, and it did little to kind of, maybe establish a pecking order with the main guy. They've got a C.J. Fuller, who's a junior, solid guy. The real X factor here is a guy named Tavian Feaster, who was a five-star, top-three running back coming out of high school here in South Carolina. He was a freshman last year, got on the field very little just because had a hard time maybe grasping the blocking schemes and the playbook, that type of thing. But he's a guy with elite track speed. If they could get him involved more, get him 12 to 15 touches, and he's a danger to take it to the house at any moment. So then they've got a young kid that they plucked away from LSU's backyard, Travis Etienne, who had 81 yards in his very first game as a true freshman on Saturday. So it's just going to be important. They're still fairly stocked at wide receiver. Deion Kane, as I mentioned earlier, great player. Hunter Renfrow, who has been the star of the team in the two games against Alabama in the national title game. Solid route runner. There's a few other guys that played as freshmen. And so they just reload at wide receiver. It's incredible the talent that they have there established and guys that are now going to get their chance to make a name. But it's that running back now. They're going to see if they can get somebody. And I know I kind of said the same thing about Auburn establishing the run game, but Clemson's going to be able to get some yards throwing the ball. But if they can't get anything on the ground and Auburn can afford to come after the quarterback or sit back in zone and make Kelly Bryant, who doesn't have a lot of experience, try to look for those slim openings against what promises to be a good Auburn defense, it could be a long day for Clemson offensively.
And it's going to be a great game. We look forward to watching it later today, and we look forward to talking to you down the line. Eric Boynton from Spartanburg, South Carolina, the heart of Clemson territory. Eric, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks again for having me. Call me anytime.
We're going to take a break, but we'll be right back right here on Extra Sports 1300. You're listening to the University of Fish.
Everyone, back in your seats. Professor Fish is giving a lecture.
I'm Danny Noakes from Super Sports 101.7, and you're listening to the University of Fish.
The professor is going on a power trip, the Big Ten.
The next game is probably the biggest game of the weekend. There's no question of it being the biggest game of the weekend. Ohio State, Oklahoma. We're joined now by Tim May of the Columbus Dispatch. Little game going on in Columbus this weekend, isn't there?
Yes, there is. Ohio State versus Oklahoma for the fourth time in history. And basically, the road teams have won the first three games in this on-again-off-again series. And so the fact Ohio State's favored by 5-7 points, whatever the line is at this point, is moot. I mean, you've got two big teams. They know the ramifications for this results of this game down the road probably. Got two good quarterbacks and a really good defense, and Ohio State defensive line going against best offensive line in the country in Oklahoma. There are all kinds of matchups in this one that bear looking at.
Well, now, even Baker Mayfield said earlier this week, if you want to see what the national championship is going to look like, tune in Saturday night. And it does really have that kind of implication, especially with 2 versus 5. And just like last week, before Francois got hurt, people said, okay, whoever loses Alabama, Florida State still has a chance to get to the playoff. I think that's also true in this game, don't you?
I do. I mean, different things happen. Obviously, you know, they lost Francois, so now people are basically discounting their chances. I'm talking about Florida State. You know, once you get done with this game, no matter win or lose, you pretty much have to win out if you lose. And, you know, Oklahoma did that. It's riding the longest win streak in the country right now of 11 games and didn't make the playoff last year. But bottom line is they were under consideration. Their problem was Ohio State kept winning except for one game, and there was a conundrum about the Big Ten, you know, whether it should have one or two teams in it and right on down the line. But, this game definitely has ramifications down the road. The winner, I think, has a better shot of hanging on to it than maybe the loser, because, you know, the last thing you need is doubts early in the year about your effectiveness.
Well, we saw against Indiana, the defensive backfield kind of kept that up, giving about 400 yards to Munchie Lego of Indiana. And then Kirk Herbstreit even said during the game that was the best passing offense that Ohio State would see all year. I would almost differ. I would not agree with that, because Baker Mayfield goes out the next day, goes 19 to 20 for 330 in the first half. What has the Ohio State defense got to do to shut down Mayfield?
Well, I would almost agree with Kirk Herbstreit in the sense of that quarterback was putting dimes and Coke bottles on the passes to the edge. I'm talking about Richard Lego early in that game. That's tough to defend, even if you double cover a guy, which is difficult to defend to the edges anyway. But bottom line is they've got to contain Baker Mayfield. He's one of the best, maybe the best, scrambling and then firing a rocket halfway down the field on target quarterback in the country. That's what makes him so dangerous. But he's good from the pocket also. But, you know, I really thought the difference in the game, one of the major differences in the game last year there was the Ohio State defensive front did get perpetual pressure on him, did force some bad throws, obviously got the pick six interception, which really flipped that game early. And that was off of a tip pass that Jerome Baker intercepted and returned, what, 65 yards or whatever it was for a touchdown. So, yeah, I mean, the bottom line is you've got to figure out a way to get after Baker Mayfield, but Ohio State did that last year. Granted, they had three starters in the defensive backfield that are now in the NFL that were first-round draft picks. And if you watch the Indiana game as it went on, you know, the new guys back in that defensive secondary got better as the game went on, the new starters. And I think Ohio State feels pretty confident about itself on defense. But, you know, like I've always said, man, when you play great defenses like Ohio State has the potential to be in, like Alabama's is, you've got to be willing, not only willing, you've got to throw the football to really have a shot. And I expect
okay. Well, so let's flip the field. Ohio State's on offense. What does JT Barrett have to do against the Oklahoma defense, who looks much improved from last year?
Yeah, but, you know, they were playing a team that lined up pretty straightforward last week in Texas El Paso, and I'm not discounting Texas El Paso, but they had one good drive of note, and that was it. I mean, it's not the same kind of attack that Ohio State has. The spread option or zone read option on occasion, but also like to throw the ball to the edges. And now they've been incorporated with Kevin Wilson and Ryan Day, the new coaches on board offensively. They've got much more of a sophisticated over-the-middle kind of passing game, getting guys on the run, et cetera. But what Ohio State did last year against Oklahoma more than anything else was it ran the ball down Oklahoma's throat. They ran for 291 yards. Mike Weber, who didn't play last week, but is basically expected to play this week, along with freshman J.K. Dobbins, who's going to start. Mike Weber had, 143 yards rushing, 134, whatever it was. Bottom line is Ohio State ran the ball on him and then hit some, obviously, some key passes to Noah Brown, who's now with the Dallas Cowboys. But, yeah, I mean, J.T. Barrett just got to kind of keep mixing it up much as he did last year. He also ran well against Oklahoma last year.
Well, Tim May with the Columbus Dispatch, I know we're going to have other big games for Ohio State down the line. Do look forward to talking to you then.
Hey, it's always a pleasure, my man. I always enjoy it.
The Big 12.
We're now joined by George Stoya of the OU Daily, a writer for the student paper there at the University of Oklahoma. George, how you doing today?
I'm doing good. How you doing?
You know, college football is back, and it's back with a vengeance, especially in Norman, because, you know, good game against UTEP last week. Baker Mayfield, 19 of 20, almost 330 yards. And when you look at all three quarterbacks that played, there were only four incompletions. One of those should have been a pass interference. The other two were just throwaways. What did you see from the offense this past week?
Yeah, I mean, obviously Baker Mayfield came out and played really well with 19 of 20 completions and starting 16 for 16. But I think the most impressive thing was those receivers were open, too. So I think that was one of the biggest questions coming into this fall and last spring is can the receiver step up and fill that role for D.D. Westbrook? And I think guys like CeeDee Lamb and Grant Calcaterra, who are true freshmen, really stepped into that role. And obviously Mark Andrews had a great game. So I think that was the biggest thing I saw, especially from the offense.
Now, defense is always a question at Oklahoma, especially in the Big 12. But after that first drive where they let him go down 79 yards for a touchdown, the defense tightened up, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, obviously they got that true freshman, Kenneth Murray, starting there in the middle. So I think they were a little concerned. You know, they haven't had a true freshman start at that position since 1975 in a season opener. So, but after that first drive, he kind of settled down, and the whole defense really settled down. And, you know, Oboe said it before the game that they wanted a shutout. And after the game, he said he was disappointed in that first drive. But after that, they pitched a shutout. So I think they're happy with their overall performance. And I think they're really looking forward to trying to shut down Ohio State this weekend.
Well, you bring up Ohio State, a little stiffer test on offense than UTEP. What do you see are the keys on defense to stopping JT Barrett and the Buckeyes?
Well, I think, again, it's going to be Kenneth Murray. They're going to throw a lot of crossing routes. You know, I watched that Indiana game, and they struggled early in the first half, but Ohio State really came out firing in the second half with crossing routes. And JT Barrett's, you know, he's not just a great quarterback, but a pretty good leader. So I think those linebackers are going to have to be really on point. Emmanuel Beal, Caleb Kelly, and Kenneth Murray are just going to have to be on the nose, and they're going to have to be really laser focused in, because JT Barrett's going to be throwing a lot of crossing routes. He's going to be coming off the edge, off the tackles and stuff. So I think those linebackers are probably the most important part of the defense.
Now, when you talk about the defense. A big loss on defense, isn't there?
Oh, Jordan Parker, yeah. Jordan Parker is obviously someone that played, I think, started eight games last year. Provided a lot of depth this year. Obviously, he lost the cornerback battle to Parnell Motley, but he's a guy that was playing a lot of special teams, was a guy that would come in if Jordan Thomas went down, if Parnell went down. So that does help him hurt them some with the depth. You know, they have some young guys, Trey Brown, Trey Norwood, Justin Broyles, that they're really high on. So I think they'll be okay at that position, but they do lose someone that had a lot of experience at corner.
Now, when we look at Oklahoma on offense, last week during the Ohio State, the telecast of it, Kirk Herbstreit says that that is the best passing offense, Indiana, that Ohio State will see all year. Do you think that was some bulletin board material for Baker Mayfield and those receivers?
Oh, definitely. You know, I think Kirk didn't realize what he was saying when he said that, because Baker Mayfield will definitely be the best quarterback they face this year. Maybe the kid from Penn State, Sorley, is pretty good too. But Mayfield's definitely the best quarterback they'll face. And, you know, I don't know if they've ever faced someone like Mark Andrews who can really, you know, get down and block, and then he can also come out and catch the ball. So I don't know what Kirk was talking about, but I think Oklahoma could actually give Ohio State a run for the money in the passing game this weekend.
I know balance is going to be a big thing for the Oklahoma offense this week. Who do you see really stepping up? Is it Abdul Adams? Is it Trey Sermon? Is it someone else in the running game?
Yeah, you know, I think Abdul Adams kind of did separate himself against UTEP. Obviously, it's UTEP, so you can't really tell. But I think Abdul Adams did look like their best back. But I think the guy that really watched for this weekend in the running game is Dimitri Flowers. I think they're going to, even though he plays fullback, I think they're going to run him quite a bit. I know last year he played a little bit against Iowa State when Mixon and Pirine were out, but he really does a good job of hitting the hole. He's physical, and he can catch the ball in the backfield. So I'd watch for Dimitri Flowers to play a big role on Saturday.
Well, it's going to be a great game in Columbus later this evening. George Stoy with the OU Daily. Want to thank you for joining us. A lot of big games coming up this year for Oklahoma. I'm sure we'll be talking to you again.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me on.
We're going to take a break, but we'll be right back right here on Extra Sports 1300. You're listening to the University of Fish.
Let's take a step out in the quad. Professor Fish is giving a lecture.
This is Mike McIntyre from the University of Colorado football, and you're listening to the University of Fish.
All right, it's that time again. It's time for Fish's Picks, and I got to tell you, last week, if you went with everything I told you, you made some money. Not a whole lot, 6-4 on the week, but we do have a guest picker again this week, and maybe he can do better than Mac Engel, the Fort Worth Star-Telegram that I had last week. We're joined this week by Derek Wilburn. He's the head of the Rocky Mountain Black Conservatives, writes for AllenBUS.com. He knows his politics. We're going to find out today if he knows his college football. Derek, how you doing today?
My friend, if I were any better, I'd be guilty. My team has another powder puff this week, which means we roll to 2-0. And I'm looking forward to a great weekend of football. Let's do it.
All right, we're going to start off in Washington State. We got the Wizard of the Wazoo, that being Mike Leach, taking on Boise State. Washington State's a 10.5-point favorite. Who do you got?
You know, this is one of those Boise State loves to jump on Pac-12 opponents. It's one of their favorite things to do. They feel disrespected by those guys. But when they're not on the Smurf turf, things get a little bit tougher. I think Wazoo is for real this year. I think their number 20 ranking is probably maybe even a little bit underranked. I think that Washington State is going to roll, cover without a problem, take the Cougs.
You're going with the Cougars. I hate to agree with you. I always hate to agree with you. You know that. But Boise State, even though Rippon will be playing at his uncle's alma mater, Mark Rippon, the Super Bowl MVP, will be there. But I don't know if he'll be wearing the Boise blue or the Washington State, whatever color, purple, red, whatever that is. It's not going to matter. Washington State is for real this year. Take the Cougars with the points and make you some money. Next, we have the Holy War. This game being played in Salt Lake at BYU. Utah coming in a 1.5-point favorite at the Cougars. Once again, Cougars, who do you like?
BYU has been demoralized. They opened up the season at home against Portland. a weak sister at best and did not look impressive. Yeah, they got the W, but it wasn't an easy one. Then they went down last week to LSU to play some of the big boys. They're trying to make themselves the Notre Dame of the West. Yeah, this unaffiliated, we'll play anyone, anywhere type thing, and every time they do, it just didn't work out so well for them. LSU demoralized them. They don't have a chance. Utah is going to roll. 1.5 is generous. It could be 10.5. BYU will lose this game.
I've got to quit agreeing with you. Someone's got to win this, but I've got to take Utah as well because BYU, what they put up on offense or what they didn't put up on offense last week, it was LSU's best defensive showing in like 60, 70 years. Coach Ed Orgeron, I don't know how real LSU is, but I know BYU is an imposter. Take the Utes with giving up the 1.5. Now, speaking of those unaffiliated play anybody anywhere, SEC, Georgia, going into touchdown Jesus. Notre Dame, a 6.5-point favorite. They're under the auspices of touchdown Jesus. How do you like this one?
Touchdown Jesus is not going to be enough. Notre Dame is yesterday's news. Brian Kelly has brought in some players, but they are all still underclassmen. You know, the expansion of conferences with the footprint of conferences getting broader and geographically is really negatively affecting Notre Dame and their whole independent stature. There was once a point in time back when you were a boy, there was once a point in time where if you were a blue chip recruit and you played for a Catholic high school, you went to Notre Dame. Period. I mean, that's just how it was. Lou Holtz had that machine greased up. Not anymore. They can't bring in the talent that they need. They don't have the talent to play Georgia. Georgia, in my opinion, is a contender for the SEC East. They certainly are a contender underneath touchdown Jesus. Notre Dame will lick their wounds and lose this game by well more than a touchdown.
Now, see, here's where we're going to differ because Eason is out at quarterback for Georgia. I don't know. I mean, Notre Dame, even though that Notre Dame has been down, had a good off week. Georgia, you know, they played like an SEC team usually does, a little patsy for their non-conference. They are kind of stepping up against Notre Dame this week, but I think the loss of Eason at quarterback is enough for the Bulldogs to lose by a touchdown because I think Brian Kelly is going to right the ship a little bit, maybe go 500 this year, not a 4-8 like last year, but they'll go 500 and turn down a bowl because it'll be beneath Notre Dame, but take the Irish giving up the 6.5. Now we have an old Southwest Conference matchup. The TCU Horned Frogs going into Fayetteville to take on Woo Pig Suey. But it doesn't look like an SEC team with Brett Bielema there. TCU a favor by 3 points at Arkansas. Hogs or Frogs?
Power against speed. And in this instance, the power is going to win. I like what Gary Patterson does. He gets the undersized players. He'll put guys up front that are 260, 270, 275, not these big 320-pound earth movers, and spread things around on defense and beat you with his feet. Brett Bielema coming down there from Wisconsin, same sort of thing Barry Alvarez used to do, put a bunch of road hogs up front, blast open a hole that you could drive a Mack truck through and pound and ground and ground and pound. I think that Bielema and the hogs are going to grind them into dust. They will overpower TCU up front. They'll win the battle in the trenches. They will be the victor in this game. 3 points is not nearly enough.
I do like what Arkansas did after the A&M loss. They started posting, hey, there's still tickets available for the Southwest Classic, another old matchup from the Southwest Conference, Arkansas A&M. That's going to be played in a couple weeks. But TCU, a great offensive output this past week versus Southeast Alabama School, the deaf and blind. But and that's usually who Patterson plays in the out of conference schedule. But I think Bielema, with the quarterback he's got and it being in Fayetteville, I think 3 points, you got to take Arkansas because I think Arkansas will win the game outright. Now we go to the Battle of the Keystone State. Pitt at Penn State. Penn State looked great against Akron last week. Pitt squeaked by and got a win. Tigers or Panthers?
This is a game that should be played every year. I hope they find a way to make that happen. Pitt is still licking its wounds from losing head coach Paul Chryst and his entire staff when he got recruited away to Wisconsin. That was that two or three seasons ago? When that happens, you've got recruits who decommit. That always happens. And the replacement crew, so now you've got a bunch of kids who have only been in that school system and with that coaching staff on kind of an unexpected basis for a couple of years. They don't have the horsepower to stick with Penn State. Penn State rolled over Ohio State last year, won the Big Ten East, and still got passed over for a slot in the playoffs. I think they're salty about that. I think they're angry about that. They're going to be mean, nasty. I think they beat up Pitt 21. I'll take it every time. Penn State is going to win this game by 26.
By 26. Look at you even giving us a what the spread will actually be. With
all day.
With McSorley, with Saquon Barkley, with the big tight end who can do the windmill dunks. I can't think of his name right now, but you got to go Penn State. They're too loaded on offense. Granted, they were playing Akron, but the defense did what they had to do. They're going to do it again against Pitt. Penn State giving up 21. Take them. Now we're going to the Cy Hawk Trophy. Iowa, a 2.5-point favorite in Ames, Iowa, at Iowa State. Who's going to win the Cy Hawk?
This is almost a pick 'em for me. I don't see that there's a tremendous advantage one way or the other at two and a half. So being a Big Ten guy, born, bred, and raised in Big Ten country, I will go with the black and yellow if for no other reason than I like the look. Don't know a lot about the Cyclones. They're a perennial 500 school, in my opinion. They're never really a threat in the Big 12, and the Big 12 has been weak for most of my lifetime anyway. Bit of a dig there from a Big Ten guy. But that imitation football that they play out there in the Big 12 isn't going to get it done. Iowa, 2.5. This one, I got to go Big Ten.
I really, really, really hate agreeing with you, but, you know, I've got to go with, you know, I'm going back to Hayden Fry. Iowa is playing that kind of dirty ball back when they had Hayden Fry. They did a great job against who people think could be the number one pick in the draft, Josh Allen, the quarterback from Wyoming last week. They just completely tore him apart. Iowa State, you were nice saying they're a 500 team. They're always under 500 in the Big 12. Take the Hawkeyes. With giving up the 2.5, we're going to take a break, let you figure out your cash accounts, and when we come back, we'll finish up Fish's Picks right here on the University of Fish. You're listening to Extra Sports 1300.
Everyone, back in your seats. University of Fish is back in session.
Hi, this is Josh Ford with Sports Radio WNML in Knoxville, Tennessee, and you are listening to the University of Fish.
Welcome back. We're in the middle of Fish's Pick. We're picking this week. Our guest picker is Derek Wilburn, Rocky Mountain Black Conservatives, author on AllenBUS.com. Thinks he knows some college football. Let's get right back at it. Now we go to Louisville, a 9.5-point favorite in Chapel Hill against the Tar Heels of North Carolina.
What do they make it to 10-0 last year, I think, before they finished the season 11-2, if I remember correctly. And again, they beat up on the Lower Brooklyn Academy of Music and a bunch of other schools that nobody really cares about. They were strong enough in the ACC, but didn't really have to go nose to nose with the big boys. And when they did, they got beat. Louisville, I believe the defending Heisman Trophy winner is legit. He's got a powerful arm. He's too fast for North Carolina. I think at 9.5, Louisville's going to drop 40 on anybody. And on some people, they'll drop 50. On North Carolina, they'll put up north of 40 points. North Carolina does not have the horses. I think they have a competitive first half, and then that thoroughbred down there in Louisville runs away in the second half. I like 9.5 points. I'll take it every time.
Well, I hate to correct you. No, excuse me. I love to correct you. North Carolina, 7-5 last year with Mitch Trubisky at quarterback. And everybody's going, why are you taking a 7-5 quarterback at number two? And he's only played 1 year. But North Carolina doesn't have Trubisky at quarterback. But the Purdue offense almost beat Louisville. Purdue. Or
7-5. Did I skip a year? Did I just accidentally go back to 2015 on you?
You did, but that's okay.
Oh.
But Purdue, or how I like to say, Purdue almost beat Louisville. Louisville didn't cover. It was 24.5, and they didn't cover again. But I don't think they're going to cover the 9.5 because of the Louisville defense. They were supposed to have a good defense this year. Talked to someone last week from Louisville, said, yeah, the defense is so much better than last year, and last year was a great team. Take North Carolina, get in the 9.5. You're going to make some money there, I think. Now, we get to the big three, the matchups of ranked teams. USC giving up 6.5 in Palo Alto, taking on the Stanford Tree Trojans, or Trees.
What David Shaw is, Stanford opened up in on the other side of the globe. Not granted it was against Rice, but that was a well-oiled machine. They looked invincible down under a couple of weeks ago. Some teams, some coaches, first it was Jim Harbaugh, now David Shaw, but some coaches just seem to own a copy of the other coach's playbook, and that's Stanford USC. Stanford has owned this series. I think there's something like having won 9 of the past 11. It's just one of those things where it's a hump the opposing team can't get over. USC certainly can't get over it on the road. In a stadium where you've got Super Bowl legacy and Joe Montana, all that stuff. I think 6.5 is more than enough to get it done. I like Stanford.
Stanford, you know, I'm kind of feeling the love, pun there, because of the running back that's replacing Christian McCaffrey. But Sam Darnold, the first half last week against Western Michigan, looked pedestrian. Second half, he came out firing. I don't know what it was about the L.A. quarterbacks last week in the first half compared to the second half. Of course, talking about the Rosen ones come back against A&M for UCLA. But I think Sam Darnold will have enough to beat Stanford by a touchdown, even though they've been playing fight on in Stanford Stadium every day on a loop to get ready for when that band just drones on and drones on. Take the Trojans, giving up 6.5. USC is going to win the game. Now, Auburn, Clemson, it's a battle of Tigers. Which one wins?
Auburn is legit. Clemson lost, I believe, 11 starters on one side of the ball or the other to the NFL in the last draft. Those 11, I think 6 or 7 or 8 were first two rounders. That's a lot to replace. Auburn's legit. They've got the firepower. I like Auburn in this one, and if for no other reason than on the leg of Auburn's kicker, whom, as you may know, is an alumnus of the Classical Academy, the school that my kids attend. He graduated a year ahead of my son, who is now at the Air Force Academy. His younger brother was also recruited to Clemson, to Auburn. He is money. From 45. He's money from 50. I think this comes down to a close battle in the trenches. Who can score from 40, 50 yards away? That's Auburn on the leg of a local TCA graduate. Daniel Carlson will win this game, and Auburn I'm liking the Auburn Tigers all day.
Okay. You say Auburn is loaded. I'm looking back to last year's Sugar Bowl. They're taking on Oklahoma, taking on a mobile quarterback. The defense got exposed, and the defense pretty much intact from last year. Yeah, and they do, and so I look at Kelly Bryant. Great first game. Granted, they were playing Kent State, who's like one of the bottom 10 schools in the nation, but I think Kelly Bryant there at Death Valley, the real Death Valley, sorry LSU, but Clemson only giving up 5.5 at home. You got to take Dabo and his Tigers over the Auburn Tigers. That brings us to the marquee matchup of the week. The Oklahoma Sooners going to the horseshoe of Ohio State. Ohio State's giving up 7.5 at home. Number 2, Ohio State versus number 5, Oklahoma. Matchup of the week, who do you like?
How many times have we heard those three words followed by those three words? Matchup of the week followed by the Oklahoma Sooners. We hear it all the time, and it always ends the same way, or if not always, close enough to it. Oklahoma steps in a hole that they can't get out of in the first half. It's going to happen again. This was the marquee matchup last year, and kudos to these schools for scheduling a home-and-home, for scheduling matchups like this early in the season. It gives us something to watch. But Ohio State went down to Norman and beat them like a rented mule. And the best predictor of future behavior is past behavior. We've seen this game. It happened last year. We've got JT Barrett, who has been quarterbacking at Ohio State since 1978. It seems like this kid just won't go away. Fifth-year senior, knows his way around the offense. This one isn't close. 7.5 is not nearly enough. I hate to say it, especially with my Buckeye fan wife, who was able to hear me right now, but I've got to give this one to the home team. The Buckeyes will roll once again.
Well, when I brought you on, I thought you might know something about college football, and you're proving yourself completely wrong. Oklahoma, yes. Look at the Ohio State backfield. I just talked to Tim May, defensive backfield. I just talked to Tim May of the Columbus Dispatch, and they have to replace three defensive backs that were picked in the first 45 picks of the NFL draft. Munchie Lego of Indiana threw for 400 yards on Ohio State. That is ridiculous. And Baker Mayfield is five times the quarterback that Munchie is. And he's mobile. He's active. People are going to go, who's Oklahoma going to throw to? Because D.D. Westbrook's gone. If you don't remember, Westbrook didn't play in the game last year against Ohio State. He was hurt at the time. That doesn't matter. Steven Alexander at tight end, the running back by committee, the best offensive line in the country for the Oklahoma Sooners. I mean, you look at them, they look like an NFL offensive line. The defense, much improved over a year ago. 7.5 given, you got to take Oklahoma all day long.
Dr. Fish, it breaks my heart to have to see a grown man cry, but by this time on Sunday morning, I will be handing you tissues and saying, there, it's not that bad.
And I would say what I'll probably be using the tissues for otherwise, but I'm not going to do that because FCC regulations don't allow me to do so. Derek Wilburn, there's going to be a winner because we do have some differences. Thank you for joining us. Look forward to you coming back again.
Blessings on you, brother.
That's all the time we have for class this week, but I want you to remember, I want you to keep in your thoughts, in your prayers, in the front of your mind, the people that are having to deal with everything in the state of Florida, in Cuba, in Puerto Rico, in the U.S. Virgin Islands. They're having a hard time right now. Keep them in your thoughts. Keep them in your prayers. I'm the professor. We'll see you next week. The Other Football Show with Ryan Kaufman and Chris Braden. That's up next right here on Extra Sports 1300. Class dismissed.